Hi, it's Craig Shea.
This is Robert Gunther.
We're co-authors of Your Job Survival Guide, A Manual for Thriving and Change. This is the third of four podcasts. And in the first, we talked about the major metaphors. In the second, we provided an overview of the book. And here we'd like to take one particular point, which is the focus of a chapter, and talk about it in a bit more depth. I want to start here before Rob shares some thoughts and just tell you a brief story about a chief information officer who is fully committed to thinking about the world as a permanent whitewater world, and of although he may not be aware of the second part, dealing with it as a kayaker. One of the characteristics of this kind of a world is that you cannot trust its pace. It will churn along at in the turbulence and in the speed of its own and will not slow down. That's a key characteristic to it. So the point becomes, as an individual, let alone as a leader of individuals, how do you deal with that? How do you provide your own pacing that can allow you to deal with, to mix metaphors, the marathon that you're in? And this particular executive had a well-honed practice of entering into performance contracts. He did, which allowed him to have some regulation of the amount of work that he took into his organization. He'd been a consultant. He wanted to manage the boundaries around his work group and not have them swamped by work, and provided both a written record, a written benchmark, and a point of negotiation with his peers, other powerful executives, when they showed up to say they wanted more, and he could use this as a starting point in negotiations. Plus, he benchmarked religiously, and often had his peers involved in benchmarking to establish that not only was he on time and under budget inside the organization, but compared to others regularly, he demonstrated when they were benchmarked against external services that they were anywhere from 20 to 30 or 35% cheaper than if they'd gone outside. So he clearly had a way of trying to manage a high-performance unit, but not to break that unit and to manage the boundaries of that unit. One day, however, his boss, the CEO, calls him into his office, namely into the CEO's office, and the CIO pulls out the list of projects he's involved in, and the CEO says, "I'm well aware of your portfolio of projects, and that's a wonderful approach, and it served you well, but it's not going to work today." So the CIO immediately went into putting the portfolio of projects, which he'd hoped to negotiate off of, thinking about reductions and trade-offs, put that aside, and started taking notes about what the CEO wanted. And as the CIO went through the calculations about what this would take, he walked back to his office. It's a Monday. These kinds of conversations seem to occur either on Monday mornings or Friday afternoons. So this is a Monday morning. He's walking back to his office, and he's thinking about how long this is going to take, how many people he can free up, what it's going to cost in terms of other projects. And he thinks in terms of the fact that it'll probably take five people 6 weeks, full-time, dedicated, all-out to get this done. So he assembles the people he wants to do this, and he gives them the following instruction. He says that we have a project. This is a non-negotiable. This comes from the boss, and this project will consume you completely once you begin your work on this. But I'm not going to tell you what the project is. What I want you to do between now and Wednesday at the latest at 5 o'clock is I want you to clear your desks. I want you either to delegate, postpone, or cancel. And you know how I hate to postpone, cancel work. Much of our credibility, indeed most of it in this organization, is based on our capacity to deliver what we say we're going to deliver. But this one causes us to have to adjust those other demands. If you need any support from me in order to do this, in order to get the cancellations, the postponements, the readjustments to happen, you let me know. But as of 5 o'clock on Wednesday, I don't want you in the building for Thursday and Friday. What I want you to do at that time is to take time off based on me. It's out of my budget. It's not out of yours. I want you to get rested. I want you to have a good time, and I will see you at 7 o'clock on Monday morning. And figure from that point on through the balance of the year, this was at the very end of the calendar year, this is what your life is going to be about. And he didn't, he went on to say why he did not tell them what the project was. And he said, I'm not going to tell you what this project is because you people are so conscientious that if I told you what the project was, you would take time beginning now to work on the project. I don't want you to do that. I want you to get your desk clear. I want you to take the time off, and I want you here at 7 o'clock on Monday morning. Now, what he had done in this story was, although he had a formal way of trying to regulate or pace permanent white water, here was an exception. This was something that needed a special adaptation. And what he was doing was providing people their break up front because he didn't know if he's going to get something else dropped on him later on that would prevent him from providing them time off later. So it was a vote of confidence. People didn't need any type of Rosetta Stone to translate that this was a very important project. And he was giving them their rest, the reward up front, because this he felt he could do, although it was at some risk because he was consuming almost a full week of what he thought would be a tight six-week schedule. It turned out that once again he'd called it right and that people finished about a day early on this project. So again, he had performed well. But the big point for us, for our purposes here, is that he ended up pacing his group with a surprise in order to provide them the opportunity to deal with the permanent whitewater world.
Thanks, Greg. And, you know, as Greg's story illustrates, that, you know, you would think that in that kind of environment, you just have to rush headlong into it. And yet the CIO was able to say, okay, well, I have to control the pace of this. If I don't control the pace, all my guys are going to be totally burnt out, and I can't promise them a vacation at the end of it because it's permanent whitewater. And so it's very similar to what happens on a whitewater river. When most people look at a whitewater river, a serious whitewater river, they look downstream and they say, there is no way that you can do anything but just hang on for dear life and be flushed down this river. And if you look at, I was out paddling this past weekend on the Occhigany River in western Pennsylvania, and, you know, an inexperienced raft that was with us just banged right into a rock, flipped over, and they ended up with a very uncomfortable swim through a long rapids. And then you contrast that with people who understand how to work the environment, how to work through the environment, and have some skill at it. And this is how they run the river. They look for eddies behind the rocks, behind these swirling waters, behind rocks. As the swirling water goes by, there's water that's actually dead, quiet, or it's moving upstream. And you can pull your boat into those eddies and stop. The water rushes past you, and you're stopped. Then you turn around and you look for your next eddy, and you make your way down a totally chaotic rapid, one eddy at a time. And this is a totally different way of looking at the world than most people do. First of all, most people can't find these eddies. And in your work life, a lot of times you have to create them. And second of all, people don't know how to use them, to move from the eddy out into the current and then back into the eddy again. And this is how you keep from getting exhausted of one emergency after another in an environment where it is one emergency after another. It's in one nonstop emergency. And so by having these skills at pacing, you can be in the chaos, but not of the chaos. And there's several skills that Greg, I think, is going to briefly summarize that we talk about in the book that go along with this, how you actually pace in your own life.
One thing not to do is to simply try to run or paddle faster. Several of the strategies that we talk about in the book include the construction of a not-to-do list, namely that you don't do the traditional time management of simply drawing a list of things that you have to do, but rather you consciously take things off the list. Because if you simply work the list, you're making at least one, if not two, bets. One is you're betting that the list will eventually get smaller. It won't because you're in permanent whitewater. And or two, that you can continue to do as much or more without adjusting the list of that's caused by what's getting thrown at you. And that's probably not true either, because it is a marathon. It's not a matter of simply sprinting through list after list. Secondly, we spend considerable amount of time telling you what your mother told you, which is the importance of sleep, of paying attention to sleep, of napping. And what we know about human performance when we don't do that, as well as human health, and simple issue of enforcing vacations, both on yourself and if you're in a leadership position on people around you. Make reference to what we know and have long known about the power of vacations for creating that kind of an eddy, that kind of a pause, which is very important for human beings in order for them to perform at the level that they need to perform at when they need to perform at that level. So this brings us to the end of our third podcast, and our next one, which we hope you'll join us for, is on personal security, personal flotation devices, or as kayakers would say, PFDs. Hope you'll join us.